Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Yaron Brook. You're listening to Yaron Brook's show, and today we're doing another episode of Yaron's News Briefings, where we discuss kind of the events of the day and what's in the news, and I guess whatever I feel like it, and sometimes what you feel like based on your questions that you call in. I want to start today with the Olympics. I love the Olympics. Those of you who've been listening for a long time know this. I often talk about or at least every 2 years, I talk about how much I love the Olympics. I watch everything or anything. I'm kind of missing prime time right now on the Olympics broadcast on the NBC app because I've gone cordless, so I'm using apps now to watch everything. And it's just a blast, right? I even watch snowboarding, right? I don't care about snowboarding, but to watch the talent, to watch the drama, to watch the sheer ability. And that's the thing about sports, is that the talent is kind of obvious. It's perceptual level. This is why I think people don't mind athletes making so much money as compared to CEOs or as compared to financiers, is because they have no clue what the talent that is required in order to be successful as a CEO or as a financier. But they have a sense of what it takes to be a great athlete, the kind of dedication, the kind of hard work. And they can see it, right? They can see the performance. It's right there in front of them, whether it's the skating and the, you know, triple Lutzes or whatever the hell they call them, or whether it's the skateboarding where they do these amazing things up in the air, or whether it's the downhill skiing or any of these sports, speed skating, you know, on the ice rink. They're just amazing. And the athletes, their ability is stunning. And I think we can all appreciate human ability and human skill and human achievement at that level. And almost everybody responds. Certainly I respond anyway. And I find myself staying up way too late to try to watch more and more and more of it, and which is bad news. But anyway, I'm doing this show. I could be watching the Olympics. No, this is more fun than anything. So I don't regret that fact. So, Olympics are great. They've been a real blast. I've really enjoyed them, and it's a lot of fun, and I hope you guys enjoy them. We'll talk about living a good life. We'll talk about that more and more on the show. We'll kind of end the show a little bit on that. But there is one kind of political issue that I wanted to raise that is related to the whole Olympics thing, and that is you've probably seen it in the news. You've seen people comment on it, but I find it fascinating. And it's, it's got to do with the North Koreans appearing in this Olympic and actually having a joint ice skating team with the South Koreans, which is just bizarre, and why South Korea would do this. This is like appeasement on a whole new scale, what the South Koreans are doing. But it's more than that. If anybody out there doubted how corrupt, pathetic our media is, the mainstream media is, they're fawning over the sister of the brutal, irrational, crazy, nutty, murderous, insane ruler of North Korea. Should give you a hint of how awful, bad, evil, nasty our own media is these days. It's really ridiculous, right? And while Mike Pence was there, and I thought did a decent job standing on principle and not being willing to, have any interaction with the North Koreans and condemning the North Korean regime in pretty harsh terms and not standing when the joint team walked into the stadium, which I thought was the right thing to do. Our media, you know, basically condemned him completely. He was, you know, he was awful, and it kind of shows how completely partisan the media is, you know, condemning anything the Trump administration touches. Of course, you know that I'm no fan of the Trump administration, but Pence is not bad, you know, not great, but he was not bad. And here comes Kim Jong Il's sister. So she is, I mean, this is what's stunning, right? What is her job? I had it written down here, right? What her job is. Her job title is like, she's in charge of North Korean propaganda, right? That's what she does. She's in charge of propaganda for the communist, murderous North Korea. You don't have to say communist and murderous together because communist is murderous. So communist regime in North Korea. That's her job. Her job is to do propaganda. And she comes on stage and she walks around and she smiles a lot and she shakes people's hands and she's smiling. And I guess she gave Trump kind of a sideways, weird look while Trump was trying to ignore, even they were sitting right next to each other. That's another thing. How did the Americans allow that to happen for Pence? I mean, there's a massive failure of diplomacy. Our ally, the South Koreans, embarrassed us by putting the vice president of America with the sister of a mass murderer. How does that happen? I mean, how does she allowed into South Korea? Put that aside, right? That's the world we live in of complete compromise and appeasement and moral relativism, and nobody stand up for actually what they believe. And when you do just a little bit, like Pence did, you get ridiculed and accused of all kinds of ridiculous things. But the media was fawning over this woman, right? I mean, it was like she was a princess, and actually called her a princess in some of the articles, right? And they said, wow, North Korea's hit a home run here. North Korea heads for diplomacy gold medal at Olympics. What have they done? They're still building nukes. They still threaten to launch them against the United States. They're still scaring the bejesus out of the Japanese and the South Koreans. They still live in this massive army, not that far from where the Olympics are, ready to launch an attack on Seoul at any minute. And North Korea heads for diplomatic gold medal at Olympics. That's Reuters. The New York Times. Kim Jong-un's sister turns on the charm. She's the head of propaganda. That's her job. And then it says, comma, taking Pence's spotlight. Whoa. North Korea's cheerleaders making quite an impression at Winter Olympics, USA Today. It ignores here to say the handlers of the cheerleaders are watching them closely, so none of them defect, none of them escape, none of them says something to the media that the North Koreans might find offensive. And, you know, I'm sure they've got their families hostage in North Korea, so if any one of these things happens, they can just shoot them. To show, you know, it's just stunning, right? This is the New York Times. This is Reuters. Reuters writes that Mike Pence cast one of the loneliest figures at the opening event. Well, sure, he's sitting next to a mass murderer. Sorry, the sister of a mass murderer who's part of the regime and who's head of propaganda that justifies the mass murderer's actions. I mean, what do you do in a world in which, some people, now there's been a huge backlash. I'll give the world credit. There was a huge Twitter backlash on this. All the right wing, National Review, everybody else wrote about this and critiqued the media. I think some of the media is embarrassed. The Atlantic ran a story called the fetishization, I can't pronounce these words, sorry, of Kim Jong-un criticizing the media for this. But it's truly it truly is stunning. I mean, you have to remind people, this is a regime starving its own people. Millions of people have been killed. Millions. Not hundreds. Not, as far as I know, the Trump administration has not killed anybody. Well, maybe a few bad guys here and there. I mean, I don't like them. They're horrible, but they haven't yet killed anybody. To make a moral comparison between the Trump administration with Mike Pence and the North Korean regime is insanity, is evil, is ridiculous, is absurd, and is reflective of the kind of character of, I think, our media today. And it really is horrible. Now, one of the questions one has to ask is why? Why is this the case? And I think there are probably four reasons I can think of. One is just partisan politics. I mean, they hate Trump, and they will do anything to make Pence look ridiculous or sound ridiculous or whatever. And this is part of that campaign. So this is part of their negative view about Trump and their attempt to make Trump look like an idiot. Or Pence look like an idiot by reflection, make Trump look like an idiot. Second, the media has a positive, call it a soft spot. That sounds very weak, calling it a soft spot. For anything that is communist, right? That is communist. They might not be communist themselves, but if North Korea was a right-wing regime with a hundredth, a thousandth of the number of people killed, they would have not tolerated the sister. They would have called her a monster, Hitler's sister, whatever. No, they would have had no sympathy, zero. But whenever it comes to communist regime, whether it's the way they treat Cuba or the way they treat Venezuela, or the way, you know, they treated Stalin in his day. But even recently, what were the New York Times headline or editorials about something about, let's see if I can find this. Yeah, New York Times op-ed about that there was the women had better sex under socialism, or that with all its flaws, the communist revolution taught Chinese women to dream big. Yeah, only 60 million people died, but Chinese women got to dream big. I mean, the New York Times and our media just has this, we'll let communist regimes get away with almost anything. They'll wake up the next day and say, oh, no, they're really bad. They're hateful. They're horrible. We hate them. We don't like them. But in their weak moments, when they're not noticing, when they're focusing on a story, they will be very positive about this. So, again, I'm not one of those guys, like many out there, who don't read the New York Times, don't read the Washington Post, don't read any of the stuff. You know, I think that's nonsense. I think the only way you get any semblance of news is by reading those things and adjusting for the bias, and by reading a wide variety of things and a wide array of things in order to get a lot of different perspectives and a lot of different information. But when you get a story like this that's so damn obvious, this doesn't take any knowledge of objectivism or anything to figure this one out, you get a glimpse of how biased and how bad they really, really, really are. And it's really bad. Okay, so we got two reasons. One was partisanship. Second was just a soft spot, which again is way too weak for the for any leftist cause, but even for communism. And that has to do ultimately with their altruism. Altruism leads you to have a soft spot for socialism. And if you have a soft spot for socialism, communism is just an extension of socialism. And then the third reason is, I think, sensationalism. You know, we live in a clickbait society, social media. You got to have great headlines in order to differentiate yourself. CNN ran Kim Jong-un's sister is stealing the show at the Winter Olympics. You know, you could substitute that for sister apprentice of mass murdering dictator of North Korea is stealing show at the Winter Olympics. Right? Or the North Korean cheerleaders with all those pictures of them smiling. I mean, they're pretty girls. And Kim Jong-un's sister's kind of pretty. Not really. We'll get to my fourth reason, which has to do with how she looks. But it's clickbait. You click, oh, cheerleaders, cool. This is cool. Oh, what was the, this is the best one, right? This is in the Washington Post. Let me see. I've got this story somewhere. Where's the Washington Post? Yeah. No, not that one. Ah, there it is. Okay. This is the Washington Post headline, right, on one of its stories. The Ivanka Trump of North Korea captivates people in the South at the Olympics. The Ivanka Trump, again, moral equivalency. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And supposedly they're quoting a former Korean analyst at the CIA, who is now at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, saying that she's the Ivanka Trump of North Korea. Why? Notice again, we'll notice the moral equivalency. Because she has family connections. Family connections, so as much as I hate Donald Trump, to a real estate guy, versus family connections to a murderous dictator, right? She has family connections, and her ability to be a compelling saleswoman. Yeah, she heads the propaganda arm of the North Korean Communist Party. And then South Korean television supposedly played up this. I mean, the South Koreans are such appeasers. I mean, really, if this is what the South Koreans want to do, then my view is, I mean, I don't believe Donald Trump's an America first foreign policy at all. My view is America should withdraw its troops tomorrow from South Korea, declare the treaty null and void, and encourage the South Koreans to continue their appeasement by merging with the North. I mean, really? Really? If they're this appeasers, why American boys? Why American dollars? Why is American blood and sweat going into protecting South Korea? If this is how they appease and how they fawn over their North Korean murderous distant relatives. Get out of there. Pull the troops home. Let South Korea defend itself. It's a rich country. Has money. Let them defend themselves. Certainly the United States of America doesn't have to use its blood, sweat, and tears to defend them. Blood, sweat, and tears. That's wrong. Blood and toil. Blood and money. Something like that. All right. So that's the third reason, right? So we had partisanship. We had just the leftist nature and the fact that they love the communists. And related to that is the appeasement, the whole fact that the American media believes that appeasement is the only way, diplomacy is the only way. The fact that diplomacy with North Korea has failed for 30 years. 30 years. I read an example of Madeleine Albright under Bill Clinton actually went to Pyongyang. She actually went to North Korea and worked on a deal with them. It's quiet diplomacy. And they had a deal. And guess what? Guess what? The North Koreans reneged on the deal. Surprise, surprise. Which we didn't learn because then we cut deals with the Iranians, you know, which we haven't rescinded yet. And the Trump administration, again, doesn't actually do the America first things that it sometimes claims it wants to do. It doesn't actually act. So, you know, again, we tried diplomacy. Diplomacy has failed time and time again. The principle is here. I'm big on principles. You should be big on principles. You should live your life by principles. A foreign policy should be guided by principles. The government should function based on principles of protecting individual rights. The principle is in foreign policy, you do not negotiate with evil, ever. Under any circumstances, only you will lose. Only you will lose. You do not negotiate with evil. Ever. All right. Fourth reason. You're getting a lot of your own Brooke sighs today. Fourth reason why everybody's fawning over this woman. She wears very little makeup. She wears plain clothes. Her hair is done simply. Here she is. Somebody in the media called her a princess. A princess. The sister of a dictator. Just the fact that they call her a princess. How sick is that? But a princess. And she's plain. She's simple. She's kind of pretty, but not ostentatious. She wears no jewelry. She wears simple clothes. Oh, wow. They go, this is great. This is the opposite of Ivanka Trump. This is the opposite of American and European and South Korean ostentatiousness, obsession with being pretty, of being nice, of wearing beautiful clothes, of having jewelry. This is the ideal. She's pretty, and she's doesn't have to wear makeup, and she's plain clothes. And wow, this is the communist ideal walking into our midst. She's a saint. She's a saint. I think this is a huge part of it. If she had come all jeweled up and all fancy dressed, they would have said, ooh, all this money while people are starving in North Korea. No, she's coming like a fancy peasant. And that gives a moral authority. And this is, again, altruism. This is the hatred of wealth. This is the hatred of beauty. This is the hatred of success. She symbolizes that socialist ideal right there, and particularly in South Korea. South Korea is more image-obsessed than America. Girls in South Korea, when asked what they would want most, they talk about fancy clothes and plastic surgery. And now here comes this Korean, somebody that they can relate to in a sense, right? She looks like them, but those are not the things she wants because she's pure, right? Notice the materialism of the West versus the beautiful spirituality of communism, right? That's the dichotomy presented. I mean, that's sick. It's sick. And of course, there is no spirituality in communism. Communism is true materialism. But anyway, I mean, you know, somebody on the chat says she has zero femininity, but that's the point. That appeals against the left. The left doesn't believe in femininity, right? She's kind of masculine. I mean, she's pretty, but masculine. And again, she wears clothes that don't are not emphasizing the feminine. That's what they want. They want a princess of the masses. They want a proletarian princess. They want the counter to the glamour of even Michelle Obama or Ivanka Trump or any of these women in the West. You know, the former wife of the French president. I mean, they're all, you know, beautifully, well-dressed, attempting to be glamorous women. All right, so, yeah, complete and utter corruption by the press. Just disgusting. Really, really disgusting. And so those are my four reasons why the press does this, and I think they're all present and they're all equally there. All right, I've got two more kind of big topics, and then I want to end with something positive and interesting. But, you know, so a lot to talk about today, and we don't have that much time. So probably no phone calls today. You know, we'll probably just keep going. I want to comment briefly. Actually, before I do that, let me take a commercial break, and then we're going to comment on the Israel-Syria situation.
If you're interested in going deeper into objectivism, ARI Campus's new advanced course, Objectivism Through Induction, answers central questions about several key values of Ayn Rand's revolutionary philosophy. Originally given by Leonard Peikoff in 1997, the course teaches you the method of learning objectivism's principles that Rand used to discover them. According to Dr. Peacock, objectivism through induction is the best way I know of tying your ideas to reality and acquiring a real understanding of objectivism. Visit ARI Campus today to enroll.
All right, we're back. Let me remind those of you on YouTube and those of you on Facebook and everywhere else, please subscribe to my YouTube channel. You're already there on YouTube. There's a number of people there already. Just press subscribe. You'll get an announcement about live shows. You'll also get every time I post a new video. Also, I don't know if you've noticed, but we've been posting short videos that are pretty cool and getting some traction. The one that had Harry Potter in the title got about 14,000 views and is still going. That was just on YouTube. I think it got an equal number on Facebook. And the one on Ben Shapiro has done pretty well with like 4,000 views over the last few days. That's all made possible by your contributions to Patreon, your support of the show on Patreon. So, and of course, all these shows are made possible by that. I couldn't do it otherwise. So thank you all. And yeah, anything you can do by going to patreon.com/yaronbrookshow to help keep the show alive, to help spread the word, to help increase listenership and viewership of the show is greatly appreciated. The number of subscribers on YouTube is slowly climbing. We're nicely above 5,000 now. We're really heading towards 10,000. I'd like to try to get to 10,000 by the summer. Sooner if possible, but by the summer is the goal. That's not going to be easy. That is going to require your help. So please share, subscribe, encourage your friends to subscribe. You know, we're putting more and more of an emphasis on YouTube as a platform to reach you, to reach young people. We've already got a lot of people on Facebook, and YouTube is the next frontier. And of course, keep listening on the podcast. And again, share the podcast, let people know, and go to Patreon, patreon.com/Yaron Brookshow. And, you know, would love to have your support, would really appreciate it. And you can help the show grow significantly. We're about $1,000 away from our first goal. It would be great. Probably unlikely that we get it in February, but it would be great if we got it in February. But I'm hoping by the end of March we get to the 6,000, so which is our first goal, and from there on, you know, I'm hoping for much, much more than that. But let's get to the 6,000 mark. Jordan Peterson gets 80,000, so that's yeah. Syrian war, what's going on in Syria? Now let me just say, I'm not gonna have time to cover the Syrian war comprehensively. I've done that in past shows, and I'm actually going to put the link up on both. Whoops, for some reason it's not linking. I'm going to link. I did a show in July of last year on the Syrian war, and it's not clicking. Let me try to redo this. On the Syrian war, it was a long show. It was like an hour and a half or 2 hours, just on the Syrian war. I think a lot of people really liked that show. There was a lot of content, I encourage you to listen to that, and I'm going to try to put the link on here, but maybe it's not working. Okay, so if for some reason it's not working. One more shot, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Okay, it's not working. All right, so it is Radical Capitalist episode 93 from April 9th. You can get it on iTunes, you can get it on Stitcher, you can get it on Blog Talk Radio. Radical Capitalist, episode 93, where I analyze in great detail the Syrian conflict. And I have to say, looking back, 9 months later, I was spot on everything I said there. And things have only gotten worse in a way that I think I predicted back there. But something happened this weekend that is worth commenting on. And that is that the Iranians who are now have bases in Syria and who are supporting of the Assad regime and have really helped him sustain his vicious regime in Syria. The Iranians lost a drone into Israeli airspace. Israel knocked the drone down and then sent airplanes deep into Syrian territory and knocked out the Iranian base that was in Syria, right? On the way back, the Syrians, using the latest Russian anti-aircraft technology, actually, for the first time, I think in 30 years, I think this is true, in 30 years, actually shot down an Israeli airplane, actually shot down an Israeli F-16. Now, that's unheard of. Israel has managed to overcome the anti-aircraft defense systems that the Russians have built, that they've sold to the Syrians, that they sold to Iraqis and Iranians and everybody else. Israel's always been able to get around this. And what I suspect happened here is pilot error. That is what seems to be coming through, is that the pilots weren't focused on the right thing, and they landed up bailing from the airplane and minor injuries. They're okay, but the airplane got knocked down, which the Syrians take as a huge victory. What is not being reported, but if you go to the Israeli websites, you find, is that in retaliation, I don't see why this is retaliation. They just should always do this. I don't know why they wait. Israel basically knocked down half of the entire air defense capability of the Syrians over the weekend. So right after that, Israel basically went out and knocked out half of their capabilities. I think they would have continued, but the new most important global player in the Middle East right now, the Russians, Putin called Netanyahu and basically told him to stop. And Netanyahu stopped, unfortunately. So, of course, the Americans have been silent completely. The Americans have given up any kind of idea of leadership in the Middle East. Obama gave that up, and Trump is only sinking us lower than even Obama sunk us in the Middle East. I mean, Trump's behavior in Syria has just been abysmal, and almost as bad, or in some ways worse, because he's a Republican, than Obama's performance in Syria. So, I mean, what this brought out is a few things. I mean, if you think about the Syrian conflict, the essential thing to understand about the Syrian conflict right now is that the Iranians, the sworn enemies of the United States, sworn enemies of Israel, have won. They now basically control the entire what's called the Fertile Crescent. They, from Iran, project power into Iraq, where they control the Iraqi government. The Iraqi government is controlled by the Iranians. You can thank George W. Bush for that. From there, they control northern Iraq, where they now control even the Sunni territories of northern Iraq. You can thank Obama for that. And then that control goes all the way into Syria and then into Lebanon through the Hezbollah, and you can thank Obama and Trump for all of that. In other words, the trilogy of presidents, which might go down in history, at least in terms of foreign policy, as maybe the worst in American history, maybe with the exception of Woodrow Wilson. It's really, really hard to unseat Woodrow Wilson as the worst foreign policy president in the United States history, because he got us into World War I and he established the League of Nations. Those two things will condemn him to hell as the worst foreign policy president in American history forever. Teddy Roosevelt is a close second. But then you've got the trilogy of Bush, Obama, and Trump. Disasters, all of them, particularly in the Middle East. And what they've basically done is handed over the Middle East, that portion of the Middle East, the Iranians. Now, think about that. Israel now, it used to be that Israel was separated from Iran by 1,000 miles of desert. I don't know what the exact number is, but hundreds of miles of desert. The only way Iran could hurt Israel is by sending long-range missiles towards Israel, missiles that Israel has been building the capability to knock down forever. Right now, Iran is on the Israeli border, on two borders. One on the Syrian border, on the Golan Heights, in the northeast of Israel, and second through the Hezbollah on the northern border in Lebanon, on Israel's northern border. It has basically all of Israel within missile range. Not the most, you don't need long-range missiles to have Tel Aviv, Haifa, the whole industrial base of Israel in the Haifa, outside of Haifa, in the Haifa Bay, all of that is within missile range of Iranians and Iranian allies. The Iranians have military bases, they have intelligence bases, they have missiles and artillery now targeted directly at Israel. Their special forces, their National Guard forces are all in Syria, and of course Hezbollah. Now, it turns out that over the last couple of years, Israel has attacked Syria, primarily Iranian and Hezbollah targets in Syria, 100 times from the air and with special forces. At least 100 times. I think they're underestimating when they say 100 times. So Israel is very aware of this and is, through pinpricking, trying to defuse the situation. But it doesn't work that way. You can keep attacking by air. You don't win wars by air. You keep attacking and attacking and attacking, and they keep building and building and building. And they don't care about human life. So they don't care about how many casualties you inflict on them. They keep getting more people and more people, particularly if they're just soldiers. And Israel, this is a real existential threat to the state of Israel, at least a real threat to the massive numbers of Israeli civilian population. So what is America doing in all of this? Nothing. Nothing. Not even supporting Israel, really. It's, what's his name? Tillerson is going to the Middle East. He's going to 6 different Middle East countries, not going to Israel, not going to Russia. Russia, by the way, is the strongest, most influential player now in the Middle East because the United States is out of it completely. So the Russians are dictating what happens there. The Russians involved. Now, again, I'm not saying that the United States needs to be involved in the Middle East militarily. I mean, I think they should. I think they should clean the place up and leave. But let's assume they can't do that, or they won't do that, or there's no moral courage to do that. Then at least withdraw your sanctions from the Russians, the Syrians, the Iranians. Withdraw from the Iranian nuclear treatment deal. Put on the most restrictive sanctions that you can, and tell Israel, you can do whatever the hell you want. Defend yourself. We give you carte blanche in the Middle East. That would be a weak policy, but a better policy than what we have today. And this Trump administration has no policy, just like Obama had no policy, just like Bush. Bush had a policy, but it was really bad, really bad. Now, in addition to that, so you add to this into the Syrian mix, and I think I talked about this in July of last year. You've got Turkey, U.S. ally, member of NATO. Member of NATO. And Turkey is attacking the Syrian Kurds. The Syrian Kurds have been the most effective military force allied with the U.S. that has basically destroyed ISIS in Syria and in Iraq. So the Kurds are the real U.S. ally in this area, in Syria and Iraq, other than the Israelis. And they have been effective, unbelievably effective in attacking ISIS. By the way, Trump is going to take credit for destroying ISIS. And great, I don't think he should take credit because I don't think he had much to do with it. The destruction of ISIS is primarily a consequence of the Kurds and primarily a consequence of the Iraqis getting their act together and the Syrian regime through the Russians getting their act together. But he will take credit for it anyway. So we're killing off ISIS, but then our allies who did the killing, because we didn't do it, the American didn't do much, are now being basically abandoned. And what is happening with them is we are basically letting the Turks kill the Kurds. We're letting the Iraqis in Iraq kill the Kurds. We're letting anybody who wants to kill our allies. They've done our bidding. We asked them to fight the war. They fought it. We give them weapons. And now that our allies are attacking them, we're stepping out and saying, to hell with you. And that's Trump. That's not Obama. That would be typically an Obama thing to do. This is Trump. It's just absurd. So before I was accusing the press of being, too left-wing. Now I'm accusing the administration of not having a foreign policy, and to the extent they have one, it's pathetic. It's childish. It's meaningless, and it's It's become the laughing stock of the world. This is the opposite of America First. So, and it's exactly what I said it would be. It was in July. Nothing's really changed. So go back to that episode in July. It was called Radical Capitalist, Episode 93, Syria Islam, What to Do. You can find it on Blog Talk. You can find it on iTunes. You can find it on Stitcher. You can find it on any podcasting app. Really worth listening to. So, you know, Trump lets the Kurds kill the Turks kill the Kurds. He lets the Iranians basically kill the Kurds through the Iraqi proxies, and he's letting the Russians take over Syria so that they can have a base in the Middle East and a port in the Mediterranean, and he's letting the Assad regime retake control over all of Syria. And the bottom line is, he is letting, and you know, okay, so he doesn't do anything, but at least let the Israelis do their thing. He's letting the Iranians have control over the Middle East. Now notice, not only is Israel threatened by the Iranians having this control, they are now on the border with Saudi Arabia, they are now on the border with Jordan, they are now on the border of the, quote, moderate, in quotes, Sunni countries. That are supposedly allies of the United States, and now they have Iran to deal with. So, you know, this is the consequence of a pathetic foreign policy. All right, that is what I want to say about Syria today. I could go on and on. We could do 2 hours just on that. Okay, quickly, this is a quick topic I want to cover, bear with me here. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to cover a quick topic. I want to say something about Russian interference in our election and what I think about it. And we'll do that.
The Ayn Rand
commercial. I want to do this commercial. All right.
Looking for inspiration? Follow us on Instagram at AynRandOrg and get your daily dose of inspiring quotes, stories on how Ayn Rand fans connect in remote places, as well as updates on our popular student program and upcoming events. You'll also see which celebrities are reading Rand and posting about it. Follow us today at AynRandOrg, AynRandOrg, the official Instagram feed of the Ayn Rand Institute. See you there.
All right, we're back, and you know, for those of you who think I'm misinforming you, you know, let me boast. I don't think there are very many people on the entire planet who know more about the Middle East, who understand the Middle East better than I do. You might criticize my position on immigration, on a lot of things, but I know that part of the world inside out. Now you shouldn't trust me. Just, you know, use your own mind, figure it out. All right, Russian interference in the election. Look, because there was a hearing in Congress, and basically the intelligence services basically came out and said, look, we expect massive Russian interference in the 2018 election. They're going to be there from now on. Everybody watch out. Be careful. We should do something about it, but we don't know exactly what to do about it. We're trying to get, I don't know. Last time I talked about the fact that they want to get Facebook and Twitter to do the policing for them. This is my view of Russian interference in the election. Yeah, they're going to interfere. The United States interferes in elections all the time. And not to make a moral equivalency, because we usually do it for the cause of what we think is freedom. They do it for the opposite cause. But the fact is, Russia's going to interfere. They probably interfered forever. Right? Who cares? Right? What I care about is if they get a hold of our voting machines and they manipulate the vote. I care about if they're actually bribing people. But spreading fake news, you know, this is what our media should do. Screen out the fake news. This is what journalism is about. Discover what is being disseminated that's untrue and reveal it. This is what our politicians should be pointing out when it's wrong. Point it out. I'm not afraid of information. I'm not afraid of their opinion. Now, I'm afraid today because our media is not doing their job, because our politicians are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. But I'm not afraid of the of you know, you got to assume that people can think. They're not just automatons driven by propaganda. And if they are, we've lost already. If they are, it doesn't matter anymore. I mean, it really doesn't matter anymore. If America is in a position where the elections are going to be swayed by some bizarre stories that the Russians are spreading, then, you know, we've lost. If people can't think for themselves, if people can't analyze for themselves, the Russians are just taking advantage of our weakness. Right? So the propaganda stuff, yeah, it's good that the CIA is telling us about it. It's good that we're all prepared. It's good that the American people know this is a threat out there and it's out there. But you can't ban it. It's free speech, particularly if they're using American entities to do it. You know, people can put out nonsense. They can put out garbage. They can put out all kinds of stuff. You can't stop it. Right? So it's bad, but the real, what's really bad is how gullible we are as a people. What's really bad is that people are swayed by the nonsense that that these people put up. That's the real problem, if you want a problem. All right. Okay, so final topic. That's all I really want to say about the Russians. And we've got one caller. We'll see if I have time for the caller. If I have, I'll take your call. If not, we'll push you out for another time. A new book out today. I got it on my Kindle. I am so excited. So excited. I'm going to recommend the book without having read it, although I started reading it, and it's good so far. I'm going to also tell you that it will probably have a lot of things that will piss you off. I'm sure a lot of the things in the book will piss me off. But I am really looking forward to reading Steven Pinker's Enlightenment Now. It's a defense of the Enlightenment. And I'm going to have to do a longer show once I've read the book about this whole theme. But this is, I think, what we're all about. This is the real mission that moves me. I want to save the Enlightenment. And this is why some of you think I'm a leftist or objective leftist or whatever. It's because some of the allies in the fight for the Enlightenment are on the left. Because they are the ones who still believe, to some extent, in reason and science, like Steven Pinker. I disagree with him on a lot of things. I disagree with his evolutionary psychology elements of it. I disagree with his economics. But he's one of the good guys. As is Sam Harris, to some extent at least. Right? As is Dave Rubin. As are many people who might be, to some respect or another, on the left. Jordan Peterson used to be on the left. The battle we are facing is a civilizational battle between the forces of mysticism left and right and the forces of reason and science. In other words, this is the Enlightenment versus the anti-Enlightenment. This is the Enlightenment versus Kant. And Steven Pinker, I read his Better Angels of Our Nature, which I thought was brilliant, particularly the first half of the book. And it was excellent, and I learned a lot from it. He's one of the good guys in this fight against the forces of anti-Enlightenment, and I encourage you all to read the book. One of the things he points out is that how good life is right now, how great life is right now, and how it's a consequence of Enlightenment thinkers. Now, again, I don't think he understands the role of capitalism. I don't think he understands anything about economics. But the idea that the cause of our current prosperity is the Enlightenment, is reason, science, engineering. He calls it humanism, but a secular morality, getting away from religion. That is what has brought the current prosperity. That is great. What a wonderful ally to have. So I'm going to read this book in the next few days. I'm really excited to read it. I'm sure we will be talking soon. I'm sure we will be talking soon about it, because I'm sure I'll do a living objectivism on it, because partially the theme of it is what I call rational optimism, and what that means and what that looks like. And I want to talk more about that, because I think it's something really lacking from the objectivist movement, is a sense of the appreciation of how magnificent life is today, and the beauty of technology, and how we should be rationally optimistic, fighting against the evil, the great evils that are out there, but also respecting and admiring and enjoying and living all the wonderful things that exist now. And Pinker's book is going to help do that. The Rational Optimist, by the way, is the name of a book by his name just escaped me, but is another really excellent book, you know, that I encourage you to read. Maybe somebody in the chat will remember the name of the guy who wrote The Rational Optimist. But, you know, Pinker is a mixed economy guy. It's sad. But, hey, I would rather take this. This is, you're going to hate this, I know, and some of you out there are going to, this is just going to reinforce your view of me. I would rather take a mixed economy, secular, enlightenment-loving, pro-science, pro-reason Steven Pinker than a religious libertarian or religious conservative any day. Any day. I'll take Matt Ridley, by the way, who's the name of the author of Rational Optimist. Thank you, David. Matt Ridley. So I would take a Matt Ridley, a Steven Pinker. They're mixed economy guys. But the battle is epistemological. And even in the introduction, Steven Pinker, in the first chapter, Steven Pinker is setting it up as, it's almost like he's taking this, you know, from Ayn Rand or from Alex Epstein. Alex makes a big deal out of this, or me, right? Out of this idea of human flourishing. The purpose is human flourishing. What leads to human flourishing? I will take that any day over a religious conservative, but even a religious libertarian. Even a religious libertarian. So that is the battle. The battle is over a morality of human flourishing, and let's argue using reason, using secular reason, about what human flourishing requires. And let's argue about epistemology, about reason versus faith, reason versus mysticism, reason versus emotions. And I think that Pinker, and to some extent Sam Harris, these guys are incredible forces on the right side of the battle line. And I will take them, mixed economy and all, over religious conservatives any day, any day. Fascists, by the way, don't believe the morality is for human flourishing. Fascists believe the morality is for the flourishing of the Aryan race, or the flourishing of white people, or the flourishing of fill in the blank, but not for individual human flourishing, because fascists don't believe in individuals. So it is not true. Collectivists do not believe in human flourishing, not individual human flourishing, which is what we're talking about. Okay, let's see. So we've got two questions. I'm going to take one. I don't think I can get the second one. Sorry. Hi, you're on the UN Book Show. Who's this? Hello, there's not a lot of time. Yeah.
Hello?
Speak up. Yes.
Hello, this is Michael.
Michael, you got 1 minute.
Okay, well, I was calling another time.
All right, we got one other one. Hi, you're new on Book Show. Who's this?
This is Logan.
Hey, Logan. How's it going?
Hey, I was wondering, are you familiar with Tom Woods?
Tom Woods, the libertarian economist.
Yeah, because
yes.
He's a religious guy, and I thought he might be somebody you could have a lot in common with, maybe.
No,
would be
can't
an exception
stand
to
Tom
the rule
Woods.
That you just said.
Would not have a conversation with Tom Woods. Would not be on the stage with Tom Woods.
Not even for a debate?
No, I wouldn't debate Tom Woods. Tom Woods is the worst kind of anarchist. He is a subjectivist. He is a Rothbardian, which I think is the worst. He is an affiliate with the Von Mises Institute, who are apologists for the South, for slavery. The whole package there is a package I cannot stand, and I will not morally sanction by going up on stage. And the fact that that people view me as similar to him is so much more of a reason why I wouldn't have anything to do with him.
Well, respectfully, I think the way you describe the Rothbardians and the Mises Institute isn't 100% accurate. But,
well,
you know, that's just my opinion.
I think it is. This subjectivist, anarchists, many of them, not all of them, are pacifists. They're moral, complete subjectivists. And, yeah, I've seen articles on the von Mises website that are apologists for Southern slavery. I've seen articles there that are not just borderline, but almost completely racist. I've seen real garbage there. They have some good economists. And Tom Wood, economics commentary is good economics commentary. But beyond that, I find the whole group there on the von Mises Institute despicable. And by the way, they will not debate me either. They will not have anything to do with me. And they've called me worse names than any Islamist has called me. They've called me worse names than any leftist has ever called me because of my stand after 9/11 in defense of America. I mean, I was a bloodthirsty maniac. I can't even remember the slurs that they called me. So, no, I have no interest in dealing with those people, and they have no interest in dealing with them, with me. So it's mutual. So,
okay, fair enough.
We got – sorry, Logan. Sorry to disappoint. But that's reality, and that's taking them all a stand. There's certain people I won't deal with. And I know people want me to debate Stefan Molyneux, and people want me to debate all kinds of people that I won't debate. I won't debate Noam Chomsky either, and I consider them in the same – kind of general moral category, that whole, you know, on left and right. And yeah, I'm probably losing a lot of listeners because of that. I probably could get much higher subscribers because of that. But at the end of the day, the moral is the practical. At the end of the day, not to compare myself to Howard Rook, but I would rather go to the Quarry and not have anybody subscribe on Twitter than have anything to do with some of these people. Now, again, the good economist at von Mises Institute. I read the economic commentary once in a while. Tom Woods is a decent economist, economic commentator. But and I don't hate all libertarians, but I really hate those libertarians. And you know, just to tell you a story about Murray Rothbard, when Murray Rothbard in the late 1960s during the Vietnam War, when an American pilot was shot down, he would raise a toast. I will not have anything to do with people who have that kind of attitude to America, even though I was against the Vietnam War and Ayn Rand was against the Vietnam War. To toast the death of American soldiers is so despicable and disgusting. I will have nothing to do with these people. I've seen Rothbardians say the Revolutionary War was a bad war. All wars are bad. They don't believe in government. So all wars are bad. We could have stayed under Britain. Nothing much would have been different. Right, that's just horrible, and it's so disrespectful, and it's just wrong, morally and philosophically and historically and from every perspective. But that kind of attitude, I just won't have anything to do with it. All right, we are done, guys. Thanks a lot. Hope you enjoyed the show today. Don't forget to go to Patreon, support the show. Don't forget to subscribe if you're on YouTube. Subscribe to my channel, please, and do everything else, like whatever, all that other stuff. Thanks a lot. Go buy Steven Pinker's book. Talk to you in a couple of days. Thursday night, same time, same place. We'll do another news briefing. Bye, everybody.